Arizona. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac. And if it is the second Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it is People and Games starring none other than Paul Loudon.
Hi there.
Paul, how are you?
Doing pretty good, Dave.
Oh, you're welcome. And this is always a great show. Very interesting with games and technology. Things are going that way. People are more engaged in the having games and design, and we've talked about a whole bunch of stuff, but we haven't talked about the topic we're going to talk about today, eSports. You know I'm a sports guy. I love it. What is eSports?
eSports is, one could say, the competitive side of gaming. This is where people play games with or against each other competitively, and in some cases even professionally, where they have sponsorships, teams, and large tournaments. And esports has been growing since the early 80s in terms of what it is. But it's, in some ways, what's going to be necessary to really get people to notice games outside of the gaming community. If you think about, you know, traditional sports like football, there are tons of people who are interested in football who never play a day of football in their lives. And that's because it's become a public spectacle that people go to games, people enjoy games. There's communities based around football that have nothing to do with football. And this is an area where games are growing, but they still haven't reached sort of big public awareness.
You know, that's interesting. And, you know, to give probably an example, you can let me know if this is an example. It's not E, of course. When you say E, I think of
electronic.
The internet. Yeah, electronic. And but on, like, ESPN,
mm-hmm.
growing, and they have it on quite a bit on their primetime programming.
And poker is an example of something that is closer to games than traditional sports have been.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's the first question to ask here is, what is a sport? What makes something a sport? And that's one that there's probably never going to be a concrete answer to, because it's one of those questions where every single person you meet will have a different opinion on whether something is or isn't a sport. You know, some people say, well, it has to involve physical activity. And say, well, you know, it's a, yes, say NASCAR. NASCAR is definitely a sport, and it's physically tolling, but the person
right.
driving it, the physical strain isn't from doing the driving, but from, you know, withstanding the pressure of the turns and everything and the mental pressure of performing in NASCAR. But there's no question that that's a sport. But then when you get into other things like poker becomes a fuzzier area because it doesn't put much strain on the body and it's played almost entirely in the mind. But at the same time, the area, but it's also fuzzy enough that there's no question that some aspects of gaming can work their way in there.
Well, there's another particular game that I really enjoy. I think you enjoy it too, but I can't remember. But I really love this game, and it was made very popular. I'm going to say at least 30 years ago, a guy named Bobby Fischer playing the Russian champ. I think they had, he was the American champ, Bobby Fischer, and the game is chess.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it on TV, and of course, watching chess on TV is sort of like watching water boil when there's no
It's not fire. The most thrilling of spectator activities.
Yeah, exactly. But is that considered a sport? Because Bobby Fischer, now he passed away. That's probably another show. He, of course, went to other countries and had some controversies surrounding him. However, he used to say that he used to big match, do a lot of exercise and prepare physically as well as mentally. And is that considered a sport? Yes.
I would.
Yeah.
Again, this is one, as I said, there's a lot of, you know, room for argument about what is or isn't a sport. In my opinion, anything that two people can compete in with set rules can be made into a sport. All you need is a way of judging who outperformed the other person, so who is a winner and who was not a winner,
right.
and rules to make the level of competition equal, that both people are starting from an equal starting point for everything other than their own bodies and minds. So I think that anything within those things can be made into a sport, and it becomes a sport once you become organized about it, that it moves up from like a game kids play on the field to a sport when you organize teams, you have referees, and you have someone who is there to judge who wins or loses.
That makes sense. So with that definition, I suspect there's so many things that most people, however, could be sports.
oh, there are many things that you could make a sport out of. You know, as I said, anything that you can compete in. And, you know, we've made sports out of, you know, swimming activities. We've made sports out of dance, where,
yeah.
you know, you look at the Olympics and we have, you know, figure skating is dance on
yeah.
ice, but we have no qualms calling that a sport. And that's because it's competitive.
Okay.
That's because as judging and scoring. And so games have been moving into this realm since the early 80s. And the first major esports tournament, and this one is right on the edge of what I would consider esports in a way, but is the World Space Invaders Tournament. This was in 1981.
I used to play that.
And there were, across the country of the U.S., 10,000 participants in this tournament. And
oh.
so this is the first large-scale one. And so Space Invaders is not a directly oppositional game. You're playing against the computer to see who has the highest score. And in a lot of cases, it really sort of depends on player being interesting to watch if you ever want to make it a spectator sport, which is one of the big weaknesses of esports is that, we'll get to that a little later, is that they are a little weak in the area of being interesting to the spectator. But like you said, chess isn't that interesting. If someone were playing a game of solitaire, you could compete in, well, you couldn't really compete in solitaire. There's a little too much randomness in it.
Right.
But something like that just isn't that interesting because the player can't show off their skill. The only skill is the final score. And the same with Space Invaders. You know, if someone gets 10,000 points and someone gets 11,000 points, the game looked pretty much the same to spectators other than, you know, one mistake here or there that made a difference. And that was sort of the beginning of esports, but not really what esports is now. But at the same time in 1981, a foundation or a group was formed called Twin Galaxies. And Twin Galaxies was created to keep track of high scores in video games, who held the world record in Donkey Kong, for example, or so on.
You saw my name. No, I used to play that all the time.
There's actually a great documentary about who held the high score for Donkey Kong and the competition over it called The King of Kong. That, it's really interesting. There's sort of a rivalry between two people and various things like that. But Twin Galaxies was founded by a man named Walter Day, and its goal was to sort of help push video gaming out there into the world and say, you know, it's something to where keep track of high scores. And they got high scores being tracked in the Guinness Book of Records. They got gaming sort of becoming recognized as it is something where you can rate two people and say who's better at it than someone else, and it was something that was worth keeping track of. So in the 80s, Twin Galaxies did this. Between the 80s and today, not much really happened until about 2000. During the 90s, you had some gaming tournaments. You had the Nintendo World Championship. You had things like that. And they were all interesting things, but most of them were one-off occasions where, you know, players would compete or show off. And you would have, you know, competitions at arcades. You might have, like, you know, people competing for the world record in Donkey Kong. But you didn't have organized competition on the scale that you do with sports. So for the 20th century, we really didn't have esports as something that could become something more. It was really just sort of the beginning standard. That sort of changed around the end of the 20th century. And part of what really did that was the Internet. Because the Internet offered the ability for people to compete against each other anywhere in the world. You didn't have to travel for qualifying rounds. You could have qualifying rounds in leagues in different regional areas.
Right on your computer.
Right on your computer.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the Internet really opened up a variety of opportunities. They also opened up the opportunity for gamers in different areas to say, hey, there's more of us out there than we thought, that, you know, it's not just, you know, the occasional geek here or there, but that there are thousands of us. Because one of the sort of myths about gaming that, you know, it's for kids. But when you look at the history of gaming, the first known video game was scientists getting an oscilloscope to play poker, or not poker, tennis. I had poker in my head still.
Yeah.
To play tennis. It was two scientists, two extremely well-educated adults. A lot of the first arcade games, the first games, were set up in bars. The pinball and the Space Invaders and stuff, they were set up in bars, not places for kids. The games originally,
right,
you know, started out as an entertainment targeted at adults. And then in the early 80s, when Atari came along and Nintendo came along, then they marketed them, the home system, stuff you would buy and hook up to your TV, as for kids, because they were, you know, parents are willing to spend money on things that their kids want, and so it was a good marketing. And so it's this marketing that really started to form the image of games for kids that, you know, exists today, because a lot of the people who are adults now were exposed to that marketing either when they were young or when they were, you know, young parents.
Like we.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's where that image came. But gaming was originally an adult hobby, and even now the average age of a gamer is 34. That it is an adult thing. Think about it as adult things. And this is one of those areas where esports can sort of help when you see, you know, grown men competing at this, and if they ever manage to come up with good ways to help the public understand what's going on, because that's a real challenge we'll get to, is what's happening here. You know, when you watch a poker game, you at least sort of know the hands, but it can still be complicated. When you watch a chess game, it's even worse. You know, you don't know special gambits, you don't know the
right
notebooks or anything. So, you know, a large part of chess is sort of structured opening, where you follow almost a set of moves until you vary it in some
right
attempt to throw off your opponent. And that extremely high-level play can't be differentiated by someone who doesn't know chess well from extremely low-level play until the game ends suddenly. And it's like, oh, wow, he only lasted so many turns. That's pretty horrible or whatever. So gaming, video games have the same problem there, that you can't really distinguish high-level play in a lot of games. And that's not interesting to watch.
Right. So the spectator part, not a good situation. Except for
it's
maybe
improving in some games.
Yeah, and I would suspect poker, since ESPN, you know, if they thought they can air this, they usually do this surrounding their saleability of commercials. So that means there's viewers. But I think that's sort of educational, you know, noticing how each player plays their hand, how they bluff. And I think it might be a component like that might be interesting than a game like chess.
And that's one thing that's going to be important is personality of the players. That the personality of the
yeah
player has to show in their play style.
Yeah,
that
and that's got to be real.
Recognize,
yeah,
oh, that's a typical Bobby Jones move,
yeah,
or whatever, that makes it more interesting because you've got that empathy between the audience and the player.
Yeah.
The other thing is commentary. You need basically professional commenters who are going to watch a match and provide some highlights to it. You know, when you're watching football, there's always that voice who's letting you know that was a good play, that was a bad play, that was a fumble, something went wrong here, something went
right
here, this is exceptional. That even when you don't know what's going on, they tell you what's going on, and
yeah,
next time you see it, you recognize it more quickly. And having those professional commenters are something, again, that until recently, until games started really growing, just haven't been something around.
So how would you get professional commentators on certain games? I know we haven't gone over the particular games, but like, I mean, just using some of our examples like chess, that would be fairly challenging for the best of commentators.
Chess is relatively slow paced. That it's,
yeah,
it's
like
Greek. You have one turn and another turn. Yeah, exactly like that. So, you know, with chess,
you have to talk about the history of people and the type of moves. Oh, it looks like he's going to do, you know, a double.
It looks
whatever
like he's following his normal opening strategy.
Yeah.
He typically opens with a solid defense, and it looks like there's no difference now than usual. You know, just talk about the general strategy they use and how they're affirming. But I think chess would be really hard to commentate
in
video
so
games. Video
yeah
games, the ones that are showing up as esports are typically very fast-paced, sort of action-y. But they're still very complex games in a lot of cases. So they're hard to watch, but think about football. If football never stopped, anytime there was a tackle, there was this brief moment where everyone agreed it was a tackle, and then instantly the person was up with the ball, and before anyone had repositioned themselves, they could throw it and start moving mm-hmm again, where there's no break in the action.
That's like
a lot of esports games. There's that degree of there's no stop until one side is one or the other. And so it's very intense and very confusing, because a football game like that, you wouldn't be able to follow it without help.
That would be very difficult.
And
yeah,
that's what a lot of the esports games sort of seem like to the viewer.
Well, how about this? There is a sport. Why don't we take a quick
yeah
break, and then let's talk about a sport that I'm thinking of. So you definitely want to stay tuned after the break. That may have potential back. May be similar to the sport that you talked about. And this is People and Games during Call Out every second Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3. We'll be
Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Every second Tuesday from 2 to 3, starring Paul Loudon. And we've been talking about e-sports, and that's about certain games, electronic games, that have a component of competition as we define what a sport is. We talked
about
Space Invaders and
football.
Yeah.
So
now a sport I was talking about that has pretty much continuous action, there's some stoppages, but is the game ice hockey. So that those commentators, by the way, we're talking about, you know, professional commentators eventually with esports, and those commentators have to be really on top of it. I mean, it goes so fast.
I have been to one hockey game.
Oh, okay.
It was
Houston Aeros?
No, actually, it was Baton Rouge.
Oh,
ice skaters!
Wow, you got a great historic franchise in AHL called the Houston Aeros. Houston and Bobby, who am I thinking of? Not Bobby Orr, the granddaddy of hockey.
No idea.
Greg knows. Oh, that was his name.
I know.
Gordie Howe. Sorry.
Of exactly one person involved with hockey, and that's Wayne Gretzky. And
that's
the entirety of my knowledge.
But Gordie Howe and his sons, I believe, played on the Houston Aeros. So. That's very interesting. So,
sports like that, commentary, hockey, maybe soccer, where the ball's in constant motion except for goals or out of field, that those are close to what playoffs looks like for competitive games. One problem that competitive games also face until recently is that typically there wasn't a system in place where you could see the whole field. Imagine that you watched a football game, and the entire game you had to see through the helmet cameras of players.
Oh.
So it was switching from player perspective to player perspective, but you could never see the whole field at once.
That would be challenging, yeah.
Yeah. And that was the challenge that games have had for a while, is that behind around being played. So they could only be seen from a player's perspective. There
That's
wasn't
right.
a way to see the overview. So a commentator couldn't see everything going on to offer commentary. They could only try to figure it out by flipping from view to view quickly and trying to put together what's going on.
That would be like commenting on a football game, for example. You've seen football games,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And the focus was only on the quarterback. And the quarterback goes back. And we don't know who's open. We don't know if he handed it off.
Exactly.
You know, that
you'd
would
have
be
to, like, you'd be watching the quarterback, and then you'd quickly flip to each of the people
yeah.
who might be receiving to see where they were. Then you flip back to the quarterback, and then flip to the other player's team to see what was going on. And you would
That'd
have
be
no
right.
idea. It would
yeah.
be extremely difficult. And this is sort of what faced the growth of competitive gaming in the early 21st century, is that games weren't designed around the idea of being esports. But very recently, last 5 years or so, games have had more of that design in them, and it's really pretty beneficial.
So what, do you want to talk about some of the games that have evolved to that level where you can see the entire game not through the perspective of the player?
The most notable games for esports right now are League of Legends, StarCraft II, first-person shooters, usually the most recent Call of Duty game. And so we'll get to those in a little bit, but we'll start a
yeah.
little further back with a game called Counter-Strike, which was actually not a game on its own, but a modification of an existing game made by some people on the Internet. And Counter-Strike became immensely popular in the early 21st century, that thousands and thousands and thousands of people were playing it as the only game they played,
wow.
where they would just go online and when you think about it, that's how, you know, sports professionals are, that they practice soccer or football or whatever every time. They don't, you know, go out and maybe
yeah.
they'll shoot hoops once in a while, you know, for fun, but
yeah.
they only really play the one game.
The game they want to focus on.
And so you got people at this game who were astoundingly good at this game. And they would form groups and they would form teams because it was a team versus team. You had the two teams were counter-terrorist forces. It was a shooting game.
Oh.
So you would have on every game, and typically you'd be randomly assigned one team or the other, and then you'd swap. And so you'd have a chance to play as both sides. And so you'd get people who would group together, and they would always play together. And these people, their skill levels would be so much above the average player that it really was exciting to watch them play or you know, try to figure out which team was the best, which group was the best. And so this sort of formed not really official tournaments initially, but that you would have – you know, groups of people would get together and say, hey, there's, you know, 20 teams out there. Let's hold an elimination tournament and see who's the best team
wow.
or whatever. And so it sort of grew organically like that, where people got together and they realized, look, it's just not that interesting to play against normal people on the Internet. We've got to play against people who are at our skill level. So they'd go out and find them and organize their own sort of sub-leagues of gamers who would play Counter-Strike against each other.
That is fascinating. And when was this specifically? 80s?
No. 1999, 2001.
Okay.
Really the end of the 20s, early 21st.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
That's when Counter-Strike and another game, the first StarCraft game, also cropped up.
Oh.
And StarCraft game was a war game where you're looking at a battlefield, you know, a little construction guy and a couple soldiers. You have the construction guy build you a base, and you have it build more stuff. And so your job is to build a base and prepare an army as quickly as possible because your opponent is somewhere on the other side of the map where you can't see them doing the exact same thing.
Uh-oh.
And so your goal is to send out your army to destroy their base, and their goal is to send out their army to destroy your base. So it's kind of like chess with guns and moving much more dynamically, not turn-based. It's everything is moving at once. So you might be controlling dozens or hundreds of little guys trying to tell them, okay, you and these three tanks go over here, you and these helicopters fly over this way and drop the bombs on the base. And so StarCraft became really popular as the genre of the game is called real-time strategy. And StarCraft was an evolution. The genre started 92-ish, 94, with a game called Dune, B-U-N-E. It was based on the Frank Herbert book, but only very loosely.
Right.
And that really isn't the origin of the genre. There are games before, but that's the first major PC game. And so the genre evolved, and this was one of the first ones that really allowed Internet play and finding people to play against online without complicated systems. And so people would play it online, And again, the skill differential between the average person and the people who played it as their only game was so big and obvious that, again, they would start forming tournaments to find out who was the best. And StarCraft especially was incredibly popular in South Korea. And this is important because South Korea is sort of where one of the big foundations of the competitive gaming movement recently has been. But South Korea is a huge fan of gaming.
Why is that, do you think?
You know, I couldn't say what culturally about them really gripped them, but it's to the point where there have been several TV channels that have been focused on gaming. We had G4 TV for a while, but they had several. And even now, one of them is still around. A lot of their TV channels that were focused on gaming have sort of died out. Around the 2005 to 2008 time, there was a sort of an explosive growth of game-related stuff and then a really quick die-out where it was kind of like everyone wanted to get in on it, but it grew too big quickly. But there's a channel called On GameNet, and it's been around since 2000. Not as an all-gaming channel at the time. It was a show in 2000 that grew into an all-gaming channel that concentrates on both gaming news and covering competitive gaming tournaments that happen in Korea quite often.
And this is a channel available
on their pay TV, so basically a cable channel.
And this is in South Korea?
No, South Korea.
Okay, South Korea.
And so On GameNet has helped put on events that have attracted more than 50,000 fans, and they're focused on esports. They're focused on the competitive gaming. They cover tournaments. Again, typically StarCraft II, League of Legends, the games that are sort of often more accessible to an audience and also more popular in South Korea. So
that would be interesting to find out what is it in South Korea that became the leader of esports. I think that would be interesting.
I think my best guess would be South Korea and all of Southeast Asia. They have a lot of sort of internet cafes. People go and get on the internet. And to be honest, a lot of internet cafes feature pirated games where you can go and play games that you don't own. And so South Korea had good internet infrastructure. They typically have better internet infrastructure than we have here in the States.
Wow.
And so you had the opportunity to go to these internet cafes and cheaply play games. And StarCraft was commonly one of those games that was available. It was sort of easy to pirate.
That's
so it could have just been, honestly, that a combination of events led into an industry.
That's interesting. And, of course, North Korea decided to do something else. They got the real stuff, like nuclear warheads, and that's their game plan. So.
But no computers to use them with. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. So that's interesting, the development of that. So a specialized channel just for games, and was it popular?
It is popular. This channel is still popular. It's still around. And they've helped form a league, in, like an actual e-gaming esports league, that covers multiple games in South Korea that has reached out to a league here in the U.S. called Major League Gaming, and we'll talk about them in a later bit.
Yeah,
but,
maybe we should take one thing I'm taking out of this at this point is that it's not too late for me to be a professional gamer. Some people call me a gamer anyway, but or a commentator. I can't wait till we talk more about that. And, of course, this is People and Games starring Paul Loudon here in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be...
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Weidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum & Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum & Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Arizona, starring Paul Loudon. We're talking about esports, and of course, we love sports. This is a whole new take on sports. By definition, we're saying anything that has some competitive element to it could be considered a sport. And we did talk about chess and poker, a bunch of different games. So, where are we now? You're sort of bringing us through the history of when some of these things in the early 80s, you said there were certain games that had a competitive nature to it.
We just talked about Counter-Strike, and specifically version 1.6, because one problem with video games is that essentially different versions change the rules. And sports do change rules from time to time. The NFL will decide we're no longer allowing this to protect our player safety or whatever.
Exactly.
But video games typically, you know, you get a new game every year. You know, there's a new Call of Duty game every year. And do you want, you know, if you want to use it as an e-sport, do you want to say, well, we accept that each year we'll play the newest game? Or do we say, well, we don't know if they're going to make the game suitable to play as e-sports. The next one may not be as well balanced, might not be as fair. Should we stick to the old ones? How do we decide in advance? There's a lot of considerations. And so Counter-Strike 1.6 was one of those issues where people picked a specific version and the player said, we like this version best. And for the players, forming their own thing, stuck to that version of the game as newer ones came out or tweaks were made, and that became sort of the de facto standard for those players. And so that has sort of carried on, that we say, okay, you know, it's better to pick a specific iteration of a game and stick with it than to allow, not really interested in how we want to play it, but how they can sell it to determine those things. So now it's, you know, a decade later, because this was around 2000, and esports have evolved a lot since then. There have been some leagues, like the World Cyber Games, which no longer exists, but ran for about 8 years. And it was sponsored by Samsung and Microsoft, and it just ended. They announced earlier this year that it wouldn't be continuing. There is the Intel Extreme Masters Tournament, which has played a variety of games, but most recently plays League of Legends and StarCraft II, which we're going to talk about as being major esports games. There is Major League Gaming, which is basically the big American league of video games. And they were founded in 2002. And they basically cover North America, so the U.S. and Canada, typically. And they play a mix of console and PC games, but again, the major games are typically League of Legends, StarCraft II, and a recent Counter-Strike game, I think they're playing, Call of Duty. They're playing Call of Duty Ghosts here. And then there's the Korean Esports Association, which was founded in 2000, so it's sort of one of the earlier founded of these. And they are currently partnered with MLG, so their players will come and play in MLG tournaments. And in South Korea, they are a non-government organization, so they aren't a for-profit corporation or a part of the government, and they were founded under the authority of the Ministry of Culture, Sports, and Tourism. So their job in South Korea is to make sure that players are treated well and have, fair deals from sponsors and tournaments and to manage tournaments, make sure tournaments are fair, things like that, and to sort of oversee all esports activity in South Korea. South Korea is really on top of this esports.
Yeah, it seems like they're way ahead of all other countries.
They very much seem to be, at least from an outsider's perspective, I have no professional experience, but everyone sort of says that Korea is where December last year, the first Korean player players regularly visit the U.S. for tournaments from Korea and South Korea and other countries. But a lot of times they're on tourism visas or other visas. And there was a Korean player who couldn't get a visa for some reason. And he tried to attend and missed several tournaments because he couldn't get a visa. And he was granted the first, visa, the P-1A visa, which is the visa for professional athletes. And so the U.S. government recognized an esports player as a professional athlete.
Oh, wow.
And so that's legal recognition of the category of esports as being actually sports.
That opens the door, doesn't it?
That opens the door for a lot of people. And so that's... That sort of shows how far it's come from a bunch of people playing Space Invaders for the highest score to the government recognizing them as athletes and giving them visas so they can play in tournaments.
That's big time.
So, playing now. Our StarCraft II, League of Legends, and shooters. Shooters are the genre of a game that's about running around and shooting space. And often it'll be two teams, whether it be red versus blue or terrorists versus counter-terrorist forces or whatever, aliens versus humans. There's typically two teams, and so people who play those competitively often play them as a team game with a group of people that they've learned to play with. Maybe they each have different play styles. One's good at support, one's good at being in the front, running distraction, whatever. And so these games are very much twitch games. They're games that are about your reflexes, your ability to look at the screen and recognize what's going on and react to it in very tiny fractions of time.
Right.
And this actually brings up another challenge of esports, that a lot of these games are played on computers. And everyone knows computers get slower as they get older. So a lot of sports, the quality of your equipment, it does matter, but typically you're assumed to have working equipment. But with video games, working equipment can be very hard to continually have because you need a top-end computer. Every time new games came out, you probably need a newer computer to play them at the fastest possible speed, because you're reacting in tens or hundreds of milliseconds. You're reacting in a very quick time. That depends on a screen that updates that amount of time, a computer that processes everything, data that gets for your mouse, and then your human biology reacting quickly enough. So no matter how fast you are, you might be slowed down by the computer that you're playing the game on.
Is that similar to race cars?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
And so how do we regulate this? Do we say that all gamers need to play at 60 frames per second, which is sort of a de facto standard? Now people are saying, well, 120 is better. I mean, it allows me to react a little bit quicker, so this is one of those questions where rules about that are becoming an issue for esports. We recognize that, we need to pay attention to the equipment that they're playing on as well as their skill. And this matters most for this Twitch genre of games, any shooter, Call of Duty. Console games are a little easier to deal with because you say, hey, look, you play it on the console. There's only one version of the Xbox. There's only one version of the PlayStation. The rules there are typically you have to use the standard controller. You can't have like a Turbo Fire controller or anything that lets you save things on it and does complex things for you. You have to use your own skill. But it's a lot easier to manage the rules in a situation like that.
That is fascinating. So there's a lot to this. And I was going to ask, it depends on the game in terms of skill set. So can you visualize this eventually, trainers? Like professional athletes usually have a coach, they have a manager, they have trainers. Can you see that in the future where players would be assigned a trainer to improve their skills or some type of coach, manager?
Absolutely.
That's interesting in itself. It opens up a whole different industry.
That it's one of those things where we're already starting to ask, would it be okay for colleges to have esports teams? That, maybe a school might compete in League of Legends or whatever. And then how do you manage that in terms of training, schedule, and things like that? What is an appropriate amount of training?
Yeah.
And what type of training? Like, how do you deal with those? And so those are questions that we're going to see asked a lot over the next 20 years as esports grows bigger and bigger.
So there's going to be some job opportunities, perhaps.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
I mean, right now, like I said, you've got shooters as being one. The major, the two biggest esports games are League of Legends. The genre is called real-time strategy. And you start on what are typically known maps. So you know the whole outline of the map because you're a professional player and you've played this map thousands of times. And you know that I start here and my opponent can be in any one of these, six or seven positions. You know most likely where your opponent is unless they move. And you build up an army, you collect, fuel for your tanks and crystals to pay for them, and you build up an army and you try to outmaneuver your opponent. And so these games are often measured in what's called APM, or actions per minute. And that's how many commands a player can give within a time period of minutes. So you might say, tell this thing to build a tank, tell this thing to build a soldier, move my tanks over here, move my other tanks over here, make sure that these guys are collecting resources, check every... And just really quickly, mentally going through this list of things and getting them all done as quickly as possible. And the best players have astounding actions per minute. So this is where you can see the difference between a professional player and an average player, is that the average player will be doing two or three things at once, and a professional player will be doing everything that can be done at once, where they will be, slowed down by the number of things that they can do rather than their own capability to keep track of.
So it sounds like it may not be for everyone, but people that want to expand their own horizons, because it sounds like some of the multitasking can be not only learned but useful in other parts of their life.
It may be. One of the things about these is in a game of football, it's the quarterback. You need to know where your team is. You need to know where your opponent's team is. You need to know where openings are. You need to keep track of all of those things at once.
Yeah.
But you also need to know things about the other team, like which of their players are good at intercepting, which of their players are good at sacking, which of their players are in a given moment. And those things are the kinds of things that a player of StarCraft has, is that there are three different factions, human and two different alien factions. And so they need to know that these aliens are good at this. On this map, it's likely that they're going to use a strategy like this because it helps them get here to do this. But they're very specialized knowledge skills in terms of how you play these.
Wow. I guess the old games, like Pong, I think, where it's just back and it looked like a tennis match. There wasn't a lot of variables, but some of these games, are there almost unlimited variables? So one could not memorize what the game is if it's limited.
There's no way to memorize what can happen, all of it.
Yeah.
Typically the winner of the match is the one that surprises the other one, and the surprise doesn't backfire. So, or in some cases, just whichever one was able to keep their cool in a tough situation, who didn't make a mistake first.
Wow, so there's a lot to something like this. Let's take our last break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion, perhaps what the future looks like with esports. It sounds fantastic. It's on the rise, various growth opportunities.
Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Back again. You are listening to People and Games every second Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3, starring Paul Loudon. We're talking about esports, something I just heard of, and we're learning quite a bit about it. If you want to hear a replay of the show, go to breakradioshow.com under Archives, People and Games, and you can hear some of the really interesting things, the history, and now we're going into League of Legends and the future of esports. What do we got?
So we've talked a bit about sports. One key thing about growing sports is that you have to have an audience who aren't just players.
Right.
And right now they aren't all players of the same game that they're watching, but they're all into it and sort of have enough of the gaming language to understand what's going on. The future of esports is going to depend, if they want to grow beyond that audience, in coming up with ways to make gaming accessible to non-gamers, people who would be interested in watching it but don't necessarily play any game. And League of Legends, which is a relatively new game, it's a couple years old, is in a genre called MOBA, or Multiplayer Online Battle Arena. And the genre is vague. It's a multiplayer online game that people battle in against each other. So
in an arena.
Yeah, pretty vague. But it refers to a very, very specific type of game. This type of game is so specific that there's only one level. Even games by other companies often repeat this level, even other games in this genre repeat this level with a slight difference.
Wow.
But when you think about it, that's how football works. That's how baseball works.
Yeah.
There's only one field in baseball. Now, if you go to different actual fields, they may have, you know, a different depth of the outfield on one side than the other, things
right.
like that, but they are all the same basic field.
Yeah, with the basic same rules.
And the same rules. And that's how League of Legends and other MOBA game works, is that you pick one up and you know what the basic idea is. You know, it might be slightly different in that, you know, some of the minor rules are different, and sometimes the way these games work is that you choose a character, and each player on each side chooses a character. It's a 5-versus-5 match. And there are hundreds of characters to choose from. Each of them works differently. So the difference between other games might be that they have completely different characters to choose from. But you'll have a 5-on-5 match, and it's a very slow game where you have computer-controlled monsters that are trying to move across the battlefield, and so does the other side, and they meet in the middle and they fight each other. And so you're trying to create opportunities for your monsters to get to the enemy's side, and they're trying to do the same. So you're fighting their monsters while trying to protect yours and vice versa. So it's a very slow match. Usually the first 15 minutes of the match, nothing exciting happens, but it's a very slow start. But it's also a game where you can see the whole battlefield as someone who's watching, typically. That either you'll be watching a tournament match, there will be a spectator mode. Now, League of Legends specifically doesn't have a spectator mode, but it's one that's planned.
Mm.
And games like this often have spectators, where you can zoom out and see what both sides are doing and immediately, at a glance, see how the battlefield's going. because you can see which side is pushed further and which side is, you know, being pushed back.
Oh.
And so it provides an easy opportunity for people who don't know much about the game to tell what's going on. It still has that problem where high-level play, where someone who does something expertly, it's hard to tell what they did and why it's high-level. But you do know that it was high-level because as soon as it happens, the enemy player is killed and sent back to their base. So you're like, oh, I don't know what just happened, but it was definitely something good because he just won that little confrontation there.
But do they have instant replay?
That'd
be interesting.
I'm sure that, you know, much like football is not a computer program, but we can still instant replay it because
yeah.
we have other stuff that lets us. And so there's no reason why a tournament couldn't have instant replay.
So the spectators and the audience could
have a commentator slow it down and say, okay, now what just happened
here? And break it. So that would be interesting.
And there are League of Legends commentators at tournaments. There are some known internet personalities and some people who are involved in the company that makes the games and the tournaments that do commentary on these games. And these are the genre of games, League of Legends and other MOBA games, that are really sort of pushing esports, especially here in the U.S. League of Legends is free. You can get the game by going online and playing it for free. I talked about how it has dozens or hundreds of characters. Every certain period of time, different of those characters are available for free. If you want to be able to play one character in any match, you have to buy access to that character for a one-time fee.
Oh.
So that's where they make their money, is that there's a free way to play it and learn how to play the game, and then once you learn your personal play style, you can buy access to permanent character ownership.
Wow.
And so so the game itself, though, provides this opportunity to really reach people because anyone can play it, and it's sort of exploded on a website called Twitch.tv. And Twitch.tv is a website where people can stream their gaming. Anyone can stream their gaming. And so you can go on Twitch, and you can see some of the famous players when they're just playing for practice or for hobby play and hear them playing and talking about, you know, some of them will talk about, you know, their strategies and what they're doing. Other ones will just talk about, you know, last night's episode of Game of Thrones. You can go online, and game streaming like this has recently become a really big thing. And this may be sort of a gateway for esports, is that it provides a lot of content for anyone who wants to sort of gather it together and try to publicize esports. Say, hey, you know, you can watch our players at any time. You can see them train. You can see them, you know, whatever. It's still really going to depend on, like I said, Microsoft has sponsored some tournaments. Intel has sponsored some tournaments. These companies often sponsor teams of players. You know, Doritos might sponsor a team or, you know, NVIDIA might sponsor a team. There's no question that they haven't already approached TV channels to try to get televised tournaments. And I know that G4 has done some back when G4 was a TV channel. But it still hasn't reached the point where you see esports on ESPN.
Yeah.
But there's no question that they're going to keep pushing because it's still a growing thing. And so one day soon you may see esports on, you know, maybe ESPN 2 or 4 or whatever.
And it's got to probably fit the model, the business model for ESPN or any station where there's usually some type of profit motive and they sell around show advertisement, that type of thing. So ultimately, I think the advertisers are going to dictate this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They very much are. And the advertisers are, in a lot of cases, going to be the sponsors. So right now the problem is just that the audience isn't big enough, but it's definitely growing. And, you know, I think the big question is still going to be League of Legends isn't quite yet the game that is going to win over audience. It's still a little too complicated.
Yeah.
And it's still a little too, you know, monsters fighting dragons for a lot of people that, you know, you're going to have to find something accessible. And I really don't know what that accessible thing is, but it's clear that the industry has been moving in that direction for the last 30 years now, that we're getting closer and closer to it, and I think we're closer than we've ever been, for sure.
Is it possible to take some of the sporting games that, you know, they have NBA, NHL, all those things, could that be used as a competitive game? Could that be the game?
I think that sporting games is almost definitely the wrong way to go, just because everyone's going to say, well, you know, I could just be watching real people play football.
Yeah.
You know, computer guys playing football isn't nearly as impressive because, you know, real people, they have to work out, they have to be strong
yeah.
to do these things. Now, if you started with a football game and you started coming up with things that real people couldn't do but still made it interesting as a sport,
right.
If you came up with ways to alter the rules that made it a more interesting sport but were impossible to do in the real world, that might be a place to start looking.
So that could work, because I think the sales are pretty good.
Oh, the sales on football games are phenomenal because people buy them every year for roster updates.
You're just saying that unless it's somewhat
unique. It has to be something that you can't get somewhere else normal from the real world.
That's interesting. So we're going to keep track of this, and maybe we can have a BTBN tournament with our other radio shows. That would be sort of interesting. The Battle of the E-Game, we'll call it. But I don't doubt it. This could be an industry to keep our eye on. And, of course, we just have to keep track of some of the big stations to see what they're doing, because that's going to make or break the trend. There's no doubt. So, anyway, this is really interesting, and we should probably do a follow-up sometime in the future on this.
Oh, we can definitely come back to this at some point in the future and say, where are esports now? What's it look like with the latest tournaments and things?
Yeah, very, very interesting, like all the shows. And, all right, so, Paul, thank you so much. Esports, replay of this show, like I said, breakradioshow.com under archives. Look under people and games coming right up. All right, Paul, and Billy Isaac, Understanding Autism. Okay.